are listening to The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And I'm your host, Julian Gioiello, and in the studio today, of course, Ben Starr.
Hey, Julian, good to have you back.
Yes, I'm glad. I'm happy to be here again in my favorite studio.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to be here today. As we mentioned yesterday, Julian is back with us. Julian, we missed you.
You know, I missed you too.
But hey, you know, there's always a lot going on. And today, also, as we mentioned yesterday, we have a very special guest with us in the studio, author Margot Berwin. She wrote a great book called Hot House Flower. Those of you who listened a few weeks back heard us discussing this book, and many of you donated to WBAI and will receive a copy of this book. If you're wondering where your book is, well, Margot's here today to not only talk to us, but to sign your books. So we'll be sending those out, and if you donated, you'll be receiving that in the mail sometime in the next week or so. So, Margot, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Ben. I'm really excited to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you
back. It's great to have you here in the studio. And Margot, why don't you tell the our listeners your history with Armand?
Armand was my psychotherapist for 18 years. And when I say that, a lot of people say, how can you admit that? How can you tell people that you were in therapy for 18 years? And that's because they don't understand how great it was to sit with Armand once a week, every week. It was just such a joy. It was really exciting, and I learned something new every week. And I wrote a book about my experience.
And so Hot House Flower was inspired by the experience of going through therapy with Armand.
It was. The full title of the book is Hot House Flower and the Nine Plants of Desire. And when I first got into therapy, I would say to Armand, I'm a writer, and I'm afraid of being in therapy because if you take away all my pain, I'm not going to be a writer anymore. I'm not going to be an artist. And he kind of laughed, but I used to say, I'm going to leave if I feel like I can't write anymore. And the opposite happened. I became a better writer, and I wrote much more through the process of therapy.
As you moved through some of your pain.
Yeah, as he removed layers of memories and pain, it freed up all this energy.
And I want to ask you a question about that. What is it with this sort of trope or archetype of the tortured artist? I mean, we hear about Vincent van Gogh, you know, he cut his ear off, he lived in destitution. Kurt Cobain, right? A more contemporary example, like Amy Winehouse as well. A lot of artists, whether they're visual artists, writers, musicians, there's this understanding or this belief or assumption that to be good, an artist almost has to be starving and in pain and tortured. What is that?
In angst or, you know, have a mental illness of some kind to sort of fuel their artistic creativity.
And I think we like to focus on those artists. The public seems to like their artists in pain. There are plenty of artists who are not in pain. Like, I think Pablo Picasso is a good example of that, of someone who was very creative throughout his entire life. And he lived a long life. And his art is very alive. And I think the same thing for Madonna. I mean, I know people are going to argue she may not be an artist. And I know that's an argument. But I think she is. And I think her work was very much alive. And I don't think she's a tortured artist.
Do you think that the general public likes to think of artists as sad or suffering?
I do, and I think that's the point from which most artists do start. They do begin because there is some pain, there's some things they need to get out to get onto the surface, but I think you have to grow from that point and become more imaginative with your art. And that's where therapy really helped me, because it freed up space for my imagination to come forth as opposed to just the things that had happened to me in my past.
Right. I mean, it seems to be that, you know, mood changes and, you know, bipolar disorder and stuff like this wouldn't necessarily be the fuel for creative, you know, expression, but more so just a different way of thinking is a way that this creativity sort of flows. And, I mean, I know artists that are talented and have plenty of angst in them, but I don't think it has to be an exclusive trait of an artist.
I agree. And also the art itself doesn't, and a person can have a lot of pain, but the art itself doesn't always have to be about that. Doesn't always have to be painful in and of itself. Like take Vincent van Gogh, who is clearly in a lot of pain, but the work, if you think about Starry Night, it's beautiful, it has movement, it's very uplifting.
Sure. I think certain mediums might have more of the reputation for the so-called tortured artists that we're talking about. I think certainly poetry is closely associated with
Definitely.
People pouring out their pain and their heartbreak. Even certain types of music, right? So when I think about some of the jazz greats, right? Charlie Parker, Billie Holiday, great artists who struggled with addiction, alcoholism, and inner demons that they worked out. But on the other side, you know, their output, their creative output was tremendous.
Yeah, and artists, I think, through their work, they can express our pain for us, which is why people are attracted to that kind of work. But artists can express a lot of emotions for us, not just pain.
Sure, sure, of course. I mean, even a musical genre like the blues, for example, right? Some of the blues tunes that you hear are about very difficult, painful stories. But, you know, there could be a blues song that's a love song.
Yes.
And it's very energetic and happy. So even like a great that we just lost, B.B. King, right? He had so many of his songs were very bouncy and happy, but bluesy nonetheless.
Yes, and I think for myself, when I first met Armand, I had written two novels, which did not sell, and he read them. He wanted to read everything I had written since I was going to be his patient. So he read them, and he said, "These are great, but nobody can relate to them because they're too painful." So there is also a level where you have to resonate.
Yeah, actually, a question for you regarding that. So this Hot House Flower would be your third?
It's my third
Your
book.
Third novel. So yeah. Where did this sort of idea start for this? Did this come from a place of pain or a place of recovery or a place of peace? You know, how did this all begin? I mean, personally, I'm not a writer myself, so the process could be a very long process, I'm sure. But where do you feel like it really sparked?
Well, it's funny when I read it now, and I did go over it again before doing this radio show. I don't even know where that came from. I dreamt a lot of it, to be completely 100% honest. Mm-hmm. I dreamt a lot of it, and I would wake up in the morning and write it down furiously before I forgot it.
Right.
And that's how a lot of it came to me. And the plant aspect of it was something that Armand taught me. I mean, he was like kind of a plant shaman.
Right, yeah. If anybody knew Armand personally, and I'm sure he mentioned it on the radio, but not quite as much as in person,
yeah.
His apartment, his office here, was filled with exotic, beautiful, one-of-a-kind plants. And the way he would treat his plants was just incredible. And it was really well orchestrated in the book that you wrote.
It was. Like he sometimes when we were doing therapy, he would not look at me at all. And he would just walk around his office and cut plants, just take cuttings the whole 45 minutes or an hour. And somehow watching him cut his plants put me in a certain state of mind, a different state of mind, a more open state of mind. And we did therapy that way, talking about plants and watching him cut plants.
If you're just joining us, we're interviewing Margot Berwin, the author of Hot House Flower and the Nine Plants of Desire. It's a book that she wrote inspired by her experience with Armand DeMille in therapy. And it's, without giving away too many plot details, it's basically about a woman who lives in New York City and she experiences a sort of dissatisfaction with her career. And when she discovers the magic of plants and these exotic plants, it changes her life.
Yeah. I walked into a laundromat on First Avenue and it was filled with plants.
Wait, which laundromat is it?
I don't know the name of it. It's just a regular laundromat on First and First.
Is it Cosmo? No, is it Cosmo? is it Laundorama? Because I live on First Avenue. I'm like, wait, which one is this?
And so I was coming home from a party, and I walked down the block, and there it was, and it was filled with plants, and it was late at night, and it was open. And I just went inside, and the owner was in there, and he gave me a cutting from one of his plants, and he told me to come back if it took root. And on the walk home, this whole book just downloaded into my head, and I made Armand the head of the laundromat, which made him laugh because he said therapy, or a therapy center, which he owned, is a place where people come to talk about their dirty laundry. So he thought it was kind of a perfect metaphor
of
for therapy.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Sure, yeah. And in the book, there is a character named Armand who is,
that
as
is
you say,
Armand.
The inspiration and the guy who runs the laundromat. And it's a very interesting novel. I read it in three sittings over the course of a weekend. And I got to say, when you say that a lot of it came to you through dreams, it makes sense to me because there is this sort of abstract, almost psychedelic
ethereal
atmosphere
kind of thing going on,
that
yeah.
runs through the novel and that keeps you interested and keeps you wanting to find out what's going to happen to this character and these plants, right? And in a way, the plants are the protagonist of the book.
They are, yes.
So it's a very interesting book. And something I had mentioned to you that to me is just was really interesting is that I have this one plant in my home, and it sits next to the chair where I read this book. And this plant, I've had it for a few years, but it's never really thrived. It's never really flourished. And my last apartment that I lived in didn't get any sunlight. It was on the low floor, the second floor walk up, and surrounded by other buildings, and it was very dark. And the place I live in now, I'm also on the second floor, but I happen to get a lot of light, relatively. And so I think the plant appreciates that. But over the weekend that I read this book, I was sitting in the chair next to this plant, and I just began to notice it more. I began to consider it more as not just a part of the furniture or the decor, but this actual living creature that I shared my space with. And in the 2 weeks that followed, I noticed the plant starting to flourish. I mean, I'm not even making this up, starting to sprout new shoots, and it's very exciting to me. And now I'm like really looking into how do I even make it better? Do I need to repot it?
You need more plants.
Yeah, maybe I do. Maybe I do, but very exciting stuff. And definitely got me interested in plants and interested in hearing more about this story. You mentioned you're writing a sequel.
I've moved out of the city for the first time in my entire life. Very, very strange.
So no more laundromats.
No more laundromats. I actually have a washer and dryer in my house.
Very
the first
exciting.
Time ever. It's so amazing.
I know,
and a dishwasher.
Yeah. Very exciting.
I've lived without those things always, and I have them now. It's very fun. But I'm starting to write a sequel, yes, to Hot House Flower. Yeah, a lot of people have asked me to do it, and my publisher has asked me to do it, so I'm going ahead with it.
That's exciting.
Yep.
Are we going to be hearing from the same characters or a new cast of characters?
That took me a while to figure out, but I think it's going to be a new cast of characters.
Almost like True Detective.
Except for Armand.
new season, new story, new
yeah,
people.
Yeah, I'm hoping to see Armand in this.
Oh, Armand will
in
be
this
in the
piece
sequel,
too. And I think it's just the right time to write a sequel about all this.
I do, too. I can really feel him, and I know that he'd be very excited about it.
And there's plenty of of research available to listen to what he was like. You know, we have our 35 years of archives. So,
yeah, that's true.
there's plenty of inspiration right there.
Yes.
But yeah, so today we're talking about artists, about Margot Berwin's book, Hot House Flower, which was sort of inspired by several things, New York City, Armand, a laundromat full of plants, and many more dreams. And well, we want to bring this idea to you and ask, you know, what do you think of this idea that artists need to be tortured to be creative? And it seems to be a trend that many artists that are the best quote-unquote artists are somewhat depressed. And I wonder if that happens a lot of the time because these artists are the people who think the most, to get kind of lost in their heads and think about everything and ruminate for a very long period of time.
Well, what I found out, because when I went into therapy, I was depressed too. Although mm-hmm. I didn't really know it, I was depressed on certain levels. And what I found out was that when the depression goes away, the art does not go away.
Right. Does it change where it kind of flows from?
It flows more easily. There's more energy for it to flow.
Right, because I've had my moment of, you know, oh, I've got this writer's block. I'm a singer-songwriter also, along with the actor and this radio hosting. And a lot of the time I'll write a song when I'm feeling very happy and I'm saying, oh, this is too happy, and it's all like, I don't know, happy-go-lucky, and there's no depth to it. And then when I'm really in pain and I'm with, you know, just after a breakup, or I've lost somebody I loved so dearly, I write four songs and they come from all this, you know, this depth. And so how do you think we can, what did Armand teach you to sort of find that depth as an artist without having to be in pain just for that to happen?
The only way I can explain it is that through the process of therapy for many, many years, it relieves your subconscious mind of memories. So memories get emptied out. And he wasn't specifically focusing on art. It's just emptying out of memories. And then it leaves a space, a vacuum. And in that vacuum comes all this energy that you have to do whatever it is you want. In my case, it was writing.
And writing is for many people, and I think for everyone who starts, like any creative endeavor, it's a huge risk.
It is.
Because we're pouring our heart and soul into something, and there's no guarantee on how it'll be received or whether it will even be read or appreciated. What did your parents do, and what was their reaction when you decided to pursue this sort of creative path?
Well, I just wanted to talk one more thing about therapy and art before I get into that, and that is that the first two books I wrote before therapy did not sell. This book sold to Random House. It was also translated into 21 languages and bought as a movie.
Wow.
That's how much
Fantastic.
Therapy changed my writing.
Wow.
And I really do credit Armand with that. Seriously, I credit him with that. I dedicated the book to him. So my parents are, my dad is a painter, he's an artist, and my mother's a nurse, and a psychiatric nurse. And my father has painted every day since he was in his 20s and held a full-time job and raised three children, but he's never shown his work. He's afraid of rejection. Maybe had he gone through therapy, he wouldn't now be with a huge body of work that nobody's ever seen, which is, it's a quite amazing body of work, but he has a very deep fear of rejection.
So having a father who is a painter, did that make it easier for you to pursue this sort of creative path, or more difficult since he was not a painter by trade, since he was more of a hobbyist who was, you know, not willing or able to share his work?
Well, he is a true painter, but he just can't share his work. I think now he'd like to, but now he's quite old and it's hard to make the connections at this point. It was hard. He was the artist in the family. He didn't really want anyone else having that role. But I went into writing because I was actually kind of a good painter when I was younger, but I went into writing because painting was off limits.
There was no room there for you.
There was no room there. But I did learn how to be an artist and work. Like, he came home every night after work and went into his studio, which was basically the basement laundry room. I never thought of that before.
Oh.
That was my father's studio. And he painted every night after work. So I learned that you can have a full-time job and be an artist at the same time, and one does not take away from the other.
Right. We actually did a show on this maybe, I don't know, 6 months ago, almost 6 months ago. Ben and I interviewed a good friend of mine, Annie Q, who is a pretty big actress right now, up-and-comer. She was on HBO, Leftovers, and then his friend Srijan, who was a Muay Thai fighter,
yeah.
I think, right? And we were just talking about millennials and sort of, it doesn't apply only to millennials, but this sort of generation that's coming out where you can work and be an artist and survive and perhaps even flourish, like I mentioned before, as an artist, and not have a 9-to-5 job and not have to, you know, say, I'm an artist, so to make money I have to sell out, you know, something like, but you can actually live and sort of utilize, you know, perhaps modern technology and the proliferation of communication technology, and allow that to sort of benefit us as artists and extend our reach, which is really exciting stuff. Because, I mean, we're sitting here saying, you know, it used to be you have to be a doctor or a lawyer, or if you don't have any of those skills, you got to go work at construction.
Be a civil servant or,
right, or
find a number of 9-to-5 positions.
Secretary,
pay the mortgage, pay the bills.
Right. And a lot of the time, I mean, I find myself doing voiceover from home and doing little music gigs all over the place. And you find this way of having like a sort of scattered work schedule that eventually I pay my rent with that. And that's kind of amazing. And it's something that's been sort of under the radar because nobody questions, but you go meet somebody and you say, well, hey, what do you do for work? And it's like, how do I explain this? I don't know. I guess I'm an artist. And it's like, oh, but what's your real job? And it's like, no, I'm an artist. And
yeah, I agree. I think that now I freelance in advertising sometimes to make mm-hmm. money as a copywriter. And I no longer have to go into an office. They just call and they're willing to, an agency will call me and say, will you work on this campaign and do a few ads for us? And they don't care where I am.
The
which
internet
is so
changed
amazing.
Everything.
Right, yeah. My sister's boyfriend is a web designer and he works for a British company, but he lived in France, he lives here, and he still continues to work full time with them. And it's just amazing that you can do that.
It's great because then I can do my writing when it strikes me. I don't have to sit in an office all day. When I wrote Hot House, I actually worked in an office full time. And I had to write it, you know, either very early in the morning or
So, writing process, you would actually. So you would have to do it only during not business hours, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was working full time in an advertising agency. It was a high stress job, very fast paced, and I would get up super early in the morning or work really late.
Do you find this free lifestyle sort of inspiring towards your creativity? Do you find it easier to put your ideas down, or is it too much freedom?
Well, having a full-time job made me know, okay, I'm writing these 2 hours in the morning, these 2 hours at night, and I knew I had to. Having so much freedom now, actually, I'm writing a lot, but I have to structure my day very carefully because it's not being structured for me like it is when you have a job and they're doing it for you.
You've chosen to leave the city where you've lived your whole life.
Yeah, I have.
You've chosen to leave the city to work on this.
It's a hard decision, by the way. If you grew up in the city, it's very difficult.
I grew up here. It was
I'm
wow.
the same, yeah. I still haven't left, case in point.
But yeah. What was that? Where was that choice, you know? What inspired that choice? Was that a necessity for you?
It was. I've been here a really long time, and I just wasn't in the flow of it. I didn't feel like I was flowing with Manhattan anymore. I just wasn't. I wanted to be more outdoors, more by the beach. I had quite a few losses last year. Armand, you know, included very recently, and I just needed to relax a little bit.
Sure. I mean, I think of, you know, Thoreau up there
yeah.
in his cabin.
There's a beautiful thing about leaving the place that you know so well and getting outside of it for a period of time, especially when it is such an intense time. And it kind of works that way with creating art in a lot of ways. I know Bon Iver, if anybody listens to
yes,
Bon Iver,
I do.
He wrote one of his most famous albums entirely in a cabin in the woods. And I mean, I don't mean to be, you know, it sounds a little bit cliche, but he said, I need to get out of where I live and what I do and all this kind of practicality and move away and say, I'm going to make this in a place that I'm maybe not as comfortable and just work from there outside of the box.
It's funny that you bring up Bon Iver because I actually thought of him when I moved. I moved into a cabin
oh, wow.
as well. It's a cabin on the beach.
I swear I didn't plan this.
I know. We've never talked about yeah. this, but I thought about him in the cabin in Wisconsin and how beautiful that piece mm-hmm. of work was. I love that whole yeah. body of work that he wrote there. And Bon Iver means good winter, and he took it from a Northern Exposure episode by the same name.
Oh, wow, that's
I happen to know that about him.
Yeah.
And so I thought about him, and that was he was a bit of an inspiration for me to move into a cabin where I live now. And write.
And then when you on your way back, like right now, you're in the city, having lived. How long have you lived outside of the city? A couple weeks or
3 months?
Months. Oh, yeah. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And is it a different place for you, or does it feel like you went right back to?
Yeah.
Where
any culture shock right now?
Well, right now, when I got to the city today, it's so unbearably hot. Like
it
when
is.
You live near the beach, it's the same temperature, but it doesn't feel anything like this. There's no heat from steel and air conditioners, you know, blowing at you.
Concrete.
Yeah. Feels really, really different. It's also very loud. Wow, is it loud.
Yeah.
Just after 3 months, it's been a little hard for me to take the noise.
Right. Yeah, I can imagine. I have a friend from the mountains in Midwest, and they came here and they said, I can't do this. And they just went back. They're like, I need to go back to my 1,200 person town because this is insane. How do you do this? There's an ambulance driving by, and then there's a fire truck behind it, and then there's someone yelling and selling water, and it's constant. And it's just not for some people. But I mean, even growing up here, leaving for 3 months, coming back, it's always like that.
Well, and I've also never written a book in Manhattan. I've always left. Mm. The two books that I now have published, I had another one published after Hot House called Scent of Darkness, about the making of perfume. Mm-hmm. I didn't write either of them in the city. One I wrote on Fire Island and in Mexico, the first one, Hot House, and the second one I wrote in New Orleans. Even living in the French Quarter, which is kind of noisy, was a lot less noisy than it is here.
So what is it about Manhattan? Because there are a lot of visual artists here.
Yes.
And they seem to be able to put out a lot of creativity. But is it different for a writer? Is it harder?
Yeah, I think New York is great for visual artists. It's incredibly visual. All the people walking around, all the styles.
Bright lights, big city.
Totally. It's very beautiful and very inspiring for visual artists. Writers, I think, go in and out. They need to be really social so that they can have experiences. And then they need to go away to write about them.
A little retreat.
Yeah.
A withdrawal.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, that withdrawal gives you that moment to be a little bit introspective about all your experiences and gather everything together. I remember reading an article about living in a city, and there's so little time to just let your mind clear itself of all of the short-term worries that you kind of have living in the city. You know, am I going to get to this appointment on time? I have to meet my friends at this moment. I have to pay my rent here. I have this bill to do. And there's all of these different things that are constantly filling your brain, and your brain saying, I need to focus on these because these are the most important things to me. And then you kind of get out and you say, let's drop all that. And what's my mind really ruminating about?
And it comes to you when you drop out. It definitely comes to you. It was scary at first living in a cabin. I live in a cabin in the woods. There's nobody around me at all. At first, I was like, how am I going to sleep? It's terrifying.
Is it
no
in the woods
sound.
Or on the beach? Or is it woods by the beach?
It's in the woods near the beach.
Okay.
Yeah. And nobody is around.
That sounds nice. I mean,
it's beautiful.
There's the, to me, this idea of the solitude and the peacefulness of the woods has always been very alluring to me.
Lots of bugs, too.
Yeah, and I actually went out to Connecticut this weekend, and it's only for a day, but even going to the countryside in Connecticut, I have a friend who lives on a pond, and there's a forest around his property, and it's just like, as a New Yorker, going out there is like, me and my sister and my girlfriend are all just like, oh my God, wow, it's so beautiful, why haven't I done this before, and all of a sudden, all these things you've been thinking about kind of settle in your mind, and you get a moment to really feel what you feel like, and that's something that I think we end up running away from a lot in New York.
Feel your feelings,
yeah,
if you can.
Absolutely, and I know that's a very a la Armand.
It is.
Yeah. Well, what it could be also is the noise of the city might make it harder to turn down the noise in our heads.
Mm-hmm. I mean, for some people, I remember Armand said, for some people, the city could be very quiet for them. I mean, I find the city very quiet. Alleyway noises and cars zooming by is actually kind of peaceful for me. I went out to Connecticut, and I heard
cicadas.
I never know how to say that. And they were so loud, and I was like, oh my God, how do these, they're so loud, and they're everywhere.
Well, we got cicadas in Queens. I don't know about Lower East Side, but...
Yeah. We're actually just reaching our 1:30 p.m. break here on WBAI 99.5 FM and The Positive Mind. Here in the studio with me, Margot Berwin, author of Hot House Flower, and Ben Starr, and myself, Julian Joiello. We're going to bring you a little bit of music and be back in just a bit. Thank you.
también, si no vacilo, se come también, que para gozar. Iriribum, 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 iriribum. Timboro, timboro, timboro. Se come también, si no vacilo, se come también, que para gozar. Hiriribum, hiriribum, hiriribum.
Jonas Pedro with Yiri Yiri Boom, a staple of the positive mind.
Wanted to just bring a little bit of summertime energy to our program today. I know it's hot and sweaty out there, but hopefully you're in your car with the AC on or the windows open, getting a little bit of a breeze.
We will be taking your calls today. We want to hear from you, 212-757-5555. We're talking about creativity, the tortured artist archetype. And we're speaking with Margot Berwin, the author of Hot House Flower. Give us a call. Are you an artist out there? Do you know an artist? What do you think about this notion of the tortured artist archetype? Is it a myth? Is it something that we've become or that we've been led to believe in? Or give us a call if you just have a question for Margot about her experience and with writing this novel and her experience with Armand. Again, that's 212-757-5555. And we'd love to hear from you. Margot, I wanted to ask real quickly, who are your literary heroes? Just for, you know, for...
That's a really tough question. There are so many of them, and they change. Right now, I'm sort of in love with Haruki Murakami, who's a Japanese writer. He's written some really amazing books, The Wind-Up Bird Chronicle, Sputnik Sweetheart, The Wild Sheep Chase. I just love his work right now. But there's lots and lots of people whose work I love.
This book, for a lot of reasons, also partly because it takes place in Mexico and Latin America, definitely has a sort of hint of magical realism, if you will.
It does. Well, it's been sold that way. I'm going to say that everything in this book is real. Although it would be very hard for people to believe that, so it was sold as fiction, but everything in it is real.
All right, we have a caller on the line. Actually, we have a caller named Armand on the line. Hello.
I wish I could do the voice.
Wow.
I hope it wouldn't be in bad taste. But in any event, I wanted to bring to your attention as regards the noise of the city versus the country, Joe Pesci in My Cousin Vinny. When he is defending the youngsters down in the South, and he's living in a cabin, he hears raccoons, he comes out shooting, he hears the trains, it wakes him up. He can't sleep. But when the judge puts him in the slammer, he sleeps like a baby with the slamming doors and yelling people and whatever all.
Yeah, it's kind of great, that contrast, ironically, found in that and what we were talking about before. I mean, I know Armand was part of a documentary called Home, which we play a couple clips of, and he talks about the noise of the city and how it has a rhythm that you have to sort of fall into, and if you don't fall into it, you end up rejecting it altogether.
You have to be in the flow of it.
Yeah.
Lived in the city all my life, and my observation is that from falling asleep in front of the television or observing family members doing this, you really are sort of conscious in your sleep, and you know a section of your mind. Perhaps you folks can verify or deny this being in the profession, but it would seem that part of the mind knows what's going on around you, And when it recognizes that it's okay, it allows you to sleep.
I think that that's true. I know what you're talking about raccoons, and I've had a lot of run-ins with raccoons since I moved into the cabin, and they are, it's really terrifying. I saw fox raccoons, there's animals all over. But I have to say that since I moved there, I've stopped taking sleeping medication of any sort or wearing earplugs, which is a first for me in like 30 years. So I do find that I sleep a lot better. I also, my dreams are a lot richer out there than they were here, because you don't have that sleep-wake. People don't realize in the city how much they wake up during the night.
Well, I did observe that I feel more tired if I leave the radio running and whenever all. When I was a youngster, I used to have the radio on, and my mom would always say, you shouldn't have that on, it's bad for you, but she didn't justify it. So being the little techno-nerd that I am, I said, well, if you didn't provide me any proof, but later on I did experiment myself, and I came to the conclusion that if I have disturbances around me, they reduce the quality of my sleep. But there are some little noises, I don't know. I mean, when we lived in the caves, you would hear the crickets outside and maybe hear the footsteps of the predator, and you would know to wake up.
That's very true. Personally, I find man-made noises just more jarring, because they stop and start, and they stop and start, whereas noises outside in the woods are more continuous, like a wind or the cicadas even. They're just continuous, so I can sleep during that.
Like the air conditioner that lulls you to
sleep. Yes, like that.
Yeah, because some people have a consistent sound that they'll leave on to help them go to sleep.
White
some kind
noise.
Of white
yeah,
noise or
and...
sea or air conditioner. Sometimes it can be even quite loud, but if it's consistent, like, I don't know if you've fallen asleep on the train. I did grow up in the city also.
Are you kidding? I slept more on the train than I do in my bed.
Exactly. I think I have to. my second home is the seat on the left in the train with the pole there. It's just so comfortable.
You got to be
Don't
careful
put your
with
feet
that
up,
now.
They'll write you a ticket.
Yeah, you can even get arrested for sleeping on the train now.
But thank you so much for calling in, Armand, and fantastic name.
I wish I could do the voice. I hope it wouldn't have been offensive. But
no,
I would have loved to have been able to do it.
Yeah, we all love to try to do Armand's voice. It's fantastic, and thank you for calling in and tuning into the Positive Mind, Armand.
Yes, and thank you.
All right,
thank
take
you.
Care.
212-757-5555, talking about creativity, being an artist, leaving the city to produce artwork or creative work, and the so-called tortured artist archetype. You know, we've kind of discussed some of the examples. We mentioned Vincent van Gogh, Kurt Cobain, Billie Holiday, and Margot, you think that it's sort of a myth, that it's not a necessity.
I don't think it's a necessity at all. I've come to that conclusion after a long time in therapy and after fighting with Armand, saying, if you do this, I'm walking away.
If you'd help me take away my pain,
I'm going to lose my creativity.
Like my pain is my muse,
yes,
almost.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. I didn't think that happiness, I thought there was no conflict in happiness. So that it's hard to write about happiness, actually. It's actually a very difficult topic to write about because it doesn't have any inherent
conflict. Right. And as we learned in school, right, that a novel is conflict and resolution.
Yes.
So I see what you mean by that. It's tough to resolve happiness when there's no inherent battle or conflict or struggle happening there.
In fact, when I was in graduate school getting my MFA at the New School, I wanted to write my thesis about happiness and about writing about happiness. And the professor told me it could not be done. That I should not attempt that because it can't be done. A thesis, a creative thesis, a work of fiction cannot be written solely about happiness.
Because there's no...
There's no conflict. There's no stakes and no conflict.
Maybe the pursuit of happiness is something that
Maybe
might
the
be
pursuit.
Exciting. I remember that movie with Will Smith and his son. It was fantastic, and it's kind of all about pursuing it and seeing it in the future as a goal. But maybe when it's... You're already there. I don't know. There's something like low stakes about that, I guess.
There is, but then again, there's something very challenging as a writer about that, about writing about happiness, about writing something that doesn't have stakes. That's a huge challenge.
Right. Does it still hold depth? Does it garner respect from people? you know, do people respect art that doesn't come from a place of pain? And that's what we're talking about today. And I really like this topic because, and we really would like to hear from you, our listeners, 212-757-5555, 212-757-5555. If you have anything to talk about regarding this topic of the tortured artist, art that comes from pain, does creativity seem to, it seems to come from this place of depression or bipolar, you know, people say, oh, I take a medication and all of a sudden all my creativity is lost.
Yeah, I'd love if we could hear from either artist, musician, or writer out there who can connect with this topic and this sort of theme that we've been discussing.
It is a strange topic, the topic of art and connecting art and happiness.
Yeah, well, I think it's not so counterintuitive. I mean, you know, we've mentioned a lot of the sort of examples of it. And, you know, like you said, I mean, you had been trying to write and, you know, you had written several books that were really born out of a deep pain and a suffering that you had trouble selling those books.
Yes.
And as soon as you wrote this book, which was after you had done a lot of emotional work and growth, you found success with this novel. So I think it's very interesting and it's really worth discussing. We have Gordon on the line. Gordon, thanks for calling in.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi, Gordon. How are you today?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Good, good. Are you an artist or a writer?
I'd love to be. But I really just wanted to let Margot know that I loved her book and I feel very fortunate to have a signed copy by her and Armand as a, you know, it's a WBAI promotional during a fun drive.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. That's fantastic, Gordon.
Yeah, I love it. I love your book and I'm looking forward to the new one. Can I just say something?
Absolutely.
In regard to people expressing themselves, I just love that people do that. And I express myself in the kitchen, in the yard, you know, that's what I do. But you take an artist, like when you're talking about pain, my example that is so prominent to me is Tori Amos when she came out with Little Earthquakes. And it has her pictured in a box, you know, like kind of struggling. And the whole album is so cathartic about her struggles and her pain and her experience. And then at the end of the leaflet, it's an empty box, which I just thought was so significant.
That's really awesome. I think it is, too. Very significant.
Yeah,
and I just love that people can express themselves as a means of they've got to get it out. And it's nice that people have the ability to do that through music, writing, and any form.
Well, I think that's true, and but I also think that an artist, after they get it out, or at least a chunk of it out, they have to grow from there. And what do you do? What do you do when you've gotten that out? Like, what was Tori Amos's next album like?
Well, you know, I find with artists, especially musicians, when their first works come out, they've been in the midst of the struggle and the pain, and then they get recognized, and what do they have to write about but, like, being on the road and, you know, what it's like to be a musician, and their suffering isn't so much their life experience anymore. It's having to keep up with their contracts and their schedules and their tour dates and things like that.
It's true. So, Gordon, what do you do in the kitchen?
I cook.
What do you like to cook?
Well, I'm pretty much a vegetarian, and I do just about anything I can with vegetables and grains. And the most satisfying thing is going out to your yard and bringing it in and making it a meal to the table.
Does it bring you happiness? Do you feel happy when you're doing it?
I'm happier than I'm on my third marriage, and it's like 13 years now we've been together, and it's probably the best relationship I've ever been in, the most satisfying and fulfilling. I think I'm at a point in my life where I do feel not complete. You know, there's always more, but I'm at a good place, I feel.
That's great. You sound like you're in a good place.
That sounds really beautiful. And that garden that you're talking about, basically garden-to-table meals.
Same-day veggies.
Sounds really, really, really great.
Yeah, it's fun. That's very satisfying.
Absolutely. I might have to take a note from you. I'm vegetarian myself. But thank you so much for calling in.
Thanks,
and,
Gordon.
You have a great day. And
thank
enjoy
you very
your,
much.
Enjoy your vegetables.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
And it's interesting he brings up cooking as a way to express himself. I mean, we all have our own ways. Margot, you write and perhaps go swimming in the Hamptons now is the new thing you get to do. What about you, Ben?
My escape, if you will? Well, in recent...
Well, what's your art?
Oh, my art.
Yes.
My art. Well, I've played guitar for most of my life. Not as seriously as I would like to. I think if I had dedicated more time and energy to it, I would be further ahead of where I am now. But I like to walk, and it's something that brings me a lot of peace. And I can walk for hours, and I can walk all over the place. I mean, I've walked across like the Queensboro Bridge and all along the length of Central Park and back and forth, and
the city's great for
that. I definitely will find myself getting lost. I'll go on an errand to like the store to get a certain kind of tomato or cheese or something, and then I find myself 2 hours later I'm in some other neighborhood in some cool store that I'd never seen before, and it's really sometimes it can be very cathartic to just kind of get lost in the city and let your mind clear and just explore a little bit. And yeah, I mean, let's hear from our we have a caller on the line.
Yeah,
right,
Tony.
Now.
Tony, you're on the line.
Yeah, guys. I was just listening to your channel. By the way, I listen often, and I was just hearing a commentary on writing from happiness and it being such a huge issue.
Yeah.
I just find myself when I work, because I love what I do. Working gives me happiness. Especially achievements during work.
Absolutely.
Tony, what do you do?
Well, I'm a real estate broker.
And what has been the best achievement that brought you the most fulfillment?
Well,
was it a specific deal?
And getting through the challenges, not really looking at them as an issue, is that there's a need, and once this need is fulfilled, and the person that presented a need originally, they're satisfied, this brings me happiness.
So you look at your job, it's an art form.
My job is an art form. It's an art form that maybe other people don't look at it as an art. You know, actually, when I was growing up, I mentioned something to my dad, and it was an issue, and I said to him, you know, there's a trick to everything. And he said to me, no, there's an art to everything.
Well, that's great. I mean, real estate is sort of like a hodgepodge of curation mixed with performance,
people skills, relationships.
Right. There's a lot to have. I mean, actually, not to bring up Ben's history, but I know he spent a few years
in real estate myself, Tony. And I,
really?
I agree that you know, there are, it is an art and a science at the same time. And you know, bringing two people together on a deal and working out how people, you know, each people have needs and expectations, and the only way to bring them together is to make sure that they're all met. So there is an art form to that.
Exactly, exactly.
I think everything can be really artistic, particularly if you love doing it. Then you bring it to a higher level, and that's where the art comes in.
Sure.
Yes, I agree.
Well, it's like we hear all the time that old saying, you know, do something you love, you'll never work a day in your life.
Yep.
And I think, yeah, Tony, that's what I'm hearing from you, is that you found something that you absolutely love, and it's a fulfilling thing, and it almost doesn't feel like work.
Exactly. Well, just to mention, it wasn't always this way. I got good at it, and other people saw that I'm good at it, and it's helping me make a pretty good living.
That's fantastic, Tony. Yeah. You're a lucky man.
Yes, you are. We should all take a note from you too, Tony. Thank you for calling in. We're going to try to get one more call in before end of our program today. But thanks for calling.
Thanks, Tony.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
Take care.
And that number to call, 212-757-5555. We got time for maybe one more phone call.
Yeah,
we'd like to hear about your views on creativity and the emotions that go into being an artist or a musician.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've just got 4 minutes left here on WBAI in New York City, and we got a phone call coming right now. 1 second.
Very interesting to hear from Tony about the fact that he found a path and...
He's on a path with his heart.
He put in the work to get very good at it, and it's a fulfilling thing, becoming, you know, very skilled at what you do. I know, you know, for me, I was never a great real estate agent, but you know, I did okay, and for me, this working in radio, working in media is my path with a heart. And for me, it's an absolute joy and pleasure. Let's take one more phone call. Murat, you're on the line. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. Yeah, so I love illustration. I've done drawing from as young as I can remember, and any kind of form, but I love things with movement. As for things that deal with like emotions, like writing or drawing from happiness or sadness, it is true. I think our culture is maybe compelled to want to highlight any creativity that comes from tragedy or maybe a tragic place in the mind or the heart, and we're just maybe more compelled to highlight it more.
Why do you think that is?
Yeah. Why do you think that?
I just think because we like to justify our pain.
Yes.
And that maybe when we see others create from pain, we want to rejoice in it, we want to celebrate, we want to like bring it out more and
that's
show
very interesting.
It a little more.
Yeah,
but I certainly don't think that it's necessary. I am a very optimistic, happy person, and I find that I do a lot of my great work when I am, you know, continuously in this great mood.
I'm so happy to hear
everything.
That.
Yeah, and there's also something beautiful about illustration and painting, visual art specifically, because you can find yourself in such a beautiful landscape or such a beautiful place or such a beautiful person that you get so inspired and so, you know, jarred perhaps by the beauty.
Even with
that
writing.
You want to try to capture it as much as you can on the canvas or on the paper. And I think it's kind of... visual art lends itself to the ability of allowing happiness or sadness or pain or anger to come through, because it really, you're trying to just depict exactly what's there.
True, very true.
And you bring your emotions into it too.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry, Mara. Go ahead.
Murat, you can go for it.
We're very excited about this topic, so we're all talking at the same time.
I know. Yes, I agree. Yeah, so like, all I wanted to just simply close on was that although people do like to celebrate it, you know, that coming from a dark place, some people, unfortunately, I think also as artists, end up, you know, getting stuck on only relying on their tragedy, as you said, you know, before, where people get, you know, their work gets worse when they're better off in life after being recognized for their work.
Right.
Because I was in a darker place, and I did start, you know, coping and using my art as an escape. But I think a very important thing that every artist needs to do is know not to rely on that and realize the true power of the art isn't just like a cure or something to cope with, but it's just a valuable and wonderful tool used to express what's deep inside in the best way you can.
That's
and it should never be
put.
Restricted just to pain.
Thanks, Murat. We really appreciate it. We're up against the break, but we appreciate your call, and thank you for tuning in.
Thank you for talking about this.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. It's been a pleasure. We'll be back next Tuesday at 1 p.m., same time, same place, 99.5 FM WBAI.
And make sure to send us a letter if you have questions for Margo, for myself, for Ben, topics that are interesting to you. Send them to positivemind@wbai.org is our email, our new email. And we loved hearing from all of our listeners today. Thank you, Margo, for being a part of our program today.
It was great to be here. Thank you.
Thank you for making it,
On this hot and steamy Wednesday.
And to all our listeners, remember, if you miss an episode, you can always download them for free on the iTunes Store. You just go on the iTunes Store and search Positive Mind, and you'll find all the most recent episodes, and you can subscribe. It's absolutely free. It'll download to your phone or your computer, and...
Absolutely.
That's the Positive Mind podcast.
And the Positive Mind will be back on next Tuesday and Wednesday at 1 p.m. here on WBAI 99.5 FM.
First you say you do, and then you don't. And then you say you will, and then you won't. You're undecided now, so what are you gonna do? Now you wanna play, and then it's no. And when you say you stay, that's when you go. You're undecided now, so what are you gonna do? I've been sitting on a fence, and it doesn't make much sense, 'cause you keep me in suspense, and you know it. Then you promise to return. When you don't, I really burn. Well, I guess I'll never learn, and I show it. If you got a heart, and if you're kind, then don't keep us apart. Make up your mind. You're undecided now, so what are you gonna do? We'll be right back.